Hello and welcome to the Surface Tension Podcast. My name is Alex. My co-host over here is Craig. We are going to be exploring deep questions and looking for deep answers to spiritual questions and questions about life in general. We're happy to have you here, and here we go.
Hi, welcome to our podcast. We have not an interview, but a special guest, because we did our last podcast was an interview with Jonathan Duncan, my nephew, and he's still in the studio. And I thought, wow, you know what? Let's capitalize on this great person's great heart, this newfound relationship with God, and explore something pretty cool. We like doing that, right? Gathering
sure
with people. I love asking questions in groups, and that's just one of my passions. And a couple of weeks ago, we had an incredible beach walk. We mentioned him at the end of podcasts all the time. But front and center, we were on this beach walk where a bunch of guys walk down to the beach and we study a scripture and we have an incredible conversation. And the text on this particular day was John 13 and the washing of the disciples' feet. And how Jesus washed the disciples' feet. And as we were going through this passage, which is an amazing passage, there was something that I felt was missing. I even shared that with the group. I said, are we missing something here? Is there something? Because I know it's, we know the story, Jesus washing disciples' feet, and he washed all of their feet, which is amazing because he even washed Judas's feet. And that he wound up betraying him. That was an incredible thing that we talked about and pointed out. Peter, of course, hey, you're not going to wash my feet, you know, and Jesus, well, then you won't have any part of me. Okay, wash all of me, Peter. Okay, love the passion. Just make sure it's directed in the right place. So we kind of know the story and we know the lessons of servant leadership, Jesus as our master's example, but I thought there was something more. And thankfully, God blesses me with questions. And I started thinking about these two different passages. I had to quickly look up these two different passages because there were two people within a very short amount of time who both saw themselves as sinful, but they had very different responses to Jesus, right? The first one's in Luke chapter 5, right? One of you has Luke chapter 5? Yes, we got Luke chapter 5 because there was just a miraculous catch of fish and Peter then encounters Jesus. What does Luke chapter 5 say?
Well, the story goes that there Simon was discouraged. Simon knew that there wasn't going to be any fish. He'd been fishing all day, fishing all night. And Jesus asked him to throw his net on the other side of the boat. Finding the exact verse here, now go out where it is deeper and let down your nets and catch some fish. And Simon replied, Master, we worked hard last night and didn't catch a thing. But if you say so, I'll let the nets down again. And this time their nets were so full of fish, they began to tear.
And so then keep going, because the rest of the story is really impactful.
He then says, a shout for help brought their partners in the other boat. And soon both boats were filled with fish and on the verge of sinking.
Wow.
When Simon Peter realized what had happened, he fell to his knees before Jesus and said, oh, Lord, please leave me. I am such a sinful man.
So Peter acknowledged his sinfulness and said, Jesus, you need to get away from me, which is fascinating. All right, we press a pause on that, and we go to Luke chapter 7, just two chapters later.
Yeah, and we've got the sinful woman who comes to the Pharisees' dinner. And she brings a alabaster flask of ointment and she drops to Jesus's feet and cleans his feet and wipes the ointment with her hair on his feet. It's a very different approach. And forgive me if I'm making this too concise, but Peter's coming from an operating system of I'm not worthy, where the woman is saying, you are so worthy. What else are we seeing there?
No, that's it. That is to me, the entire thing is, why is it when people acknowledge their sinfulness, some people say, Jesus, get away from me. And some people say, Jesus, you're the best place for me to be. What?
Right. And yeah, just jumping in on it, like, what I know about Simon is that, you know, he wanted to do his own way of life. He wanted to do his own thinking. He thought that he knew what he was doing. And so he's thinking about himself in this moment, right? And he's, I'm so sorry. He's coming from a spot of, yes, like you said, like not worthy. But knowing how the opposite is true, dude, like that you are worshiping now the one that is worthy, mm-hmm. you know, and understanding mm-hmm. that you are worthy because Jesus says you are worthy. And he's even telling you to, hey, go take your boat back out and try the other side. So that's just what's speaking to
yeah,
me through that.
Yeah, that's very good. A couple years ago, I got to do a Ragnar. I did it a couple of times, but team race, that your 200-mile team race, you run three different segments.
Sounds awful.
It was fun. It was just one of these bucket list things for me. I've always wanted to do it, and it was raising money for a good cause. And I found myself twice running in the middle of the night. And so I'm pitch dark. One of them was at 2 o'clock in the morning. It was a different year. I was running at 4 o'clock in the morning. When you're running, when you should be sleeping, it's a weird experience, right? Mm-hmm. Because everything is pretty much pitch dark. You're running through places that don't even have streetlights. And so it's pitch dark. Sometimes there's no one else around you. I'm not going to tell you whether I was ahead of everybody or behind everybody, but sometimes there's no running companions. And all you have is this headlamp that is shining right in front of you. And, you know, you turn to your left because you hear some rustling in the bushes, and all of a sudden the headlamp goes there for a minute and then returns. And then, you know, you see a car and you check that out, and the headlamp follows that. It seemed like Peter had the headlamp on his own sin, right? He was spotlighting. He was fixated on his own sin. That's what the light was shining on, is away from me, I'm sinful.
And that's not uncommon either. I understand Peter.
Yes.
Totally. Let's not pretend like,
yes,
like we don't all have quite a bit of Peter in us.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But the sinful woman's headlamp was on Jesus. And maybe that's where we can spend the majority of our time. How do we experience that shift if all of us can nod our heads in agreement and say, yeah, I spend a lot of time putting the headlamp on me and my sinfulness and how I'm falling short and how I've failed, my feelings, my experiences, my circumstance. I'm going to be like Peter and say, gosh, get away from me. You know, I don't want to. Jesus, not only do I want you to be away from me, I want everyone to be away from me. I don't feel worthy to be in anyone's company.
And how easy it is to do that.
Yes.
How easy it is to sit in that pain and just think about, like, poor me in this moment, or like, you know, in that moment, rather than like inviting, like, no, like I need your yes. feet, Jesus. Like,
yes.
I like bringing the one that matters closer.
Yes.
And inviting him into that space, because you're just distancing. You sound like Peter was distancing, but, and then the woman is just like, I know where my light needs to be. I know where my soul needs to be. Mm. I know what I need to hold on to.
Yes.
That's so like us, though, to be wearing a headlamp and trying to navigate in the dark by ourselves. When Jesus is the only light that we actually need, and the headlamp can just be tossed aside, right? But headlamps are so cool, aren't they? there's something
you need
so,
to have one.
Yeah, there's something so fun about a headlamp or a laser pointer, whatever it is. But it took Peter a long time to understand what that gal understood. It seemed like she was just straight off the block. She's like, I get it. This is who you are, and I'm going for broke. All in on you. All my poker chips are in on this hand.
Do you think if, go ahead, did you finish that thought?
I think it's okay to be in either one of these people's shoes, because although we can look at the gal and say, that's incredible. Mm. And we'd like to do that. Some of us are too thick-skulled to be like that, and I'm one of them.
Well, and we need to talk about that journey. If nothing else, we have to identify some steps between Peter and this sinful woman. It's really interesting, isn't it? Peter is one of the leaders of the church, and you had this sinful woman who was labeled. We didn't even get a name, just a sinful woman, and she's the one leading the charge and showing us how life's supposed to be lived. I love that. But if we back it up, Peter's spotlighting his own sinfulness, right? Do you think when we are spotlighting our own sinfulness, we're using that same criteria to evaluate the people around us?
I think that that's an easy way to operate. When you are dwelling, or when I am dwelling on, you know, they say I made a mistake, right? And I'm dwelling on that. I'm sitting in it, you know, like victimizing myself, you know, setting up tent camp victim, like really easy place to be, nice warm fire. Like I'm going to hang out here for a bit. I think that it's really easy to bring those in around you. And then you're just kind of operating on this sense of like self-loathing, I'd say. And like how, I mean, going back to this woman who, yes, like is not really part of the church, but sinner, right? Like she's sinning and then she comes to like his feet knowing what is right, knowing what is mm-hmm. good, knowing that like, it almost like she jumped the step of sitting in her sin.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. It would be interesting to ask her if she could answer what helped you get to this place, and it could be from an over fixating on her own sinfulness for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. Maybe she had realized that she lived in Sin City for so long. She realized, hey, this is who I am, and I know Jesus is the only solution. Where Peter was just visiting it for a day, and he thought he was fine. Hey, I'm a fisherman. I'm strong. I'm doing fine. Oh, wow. All of a sudden, in an instant, he realized, had his attention drawn to his own sinfulness, and he couldn't stand it. Mm-hmm. And so do you think people do? Do you think the Peter in us that's evaluating ourselves more, focused more on us and our sinfulness? Do you think we do that for other people too?
100%. If we're the starting point of any evaluation, we're going to get it wrong. So if we're not starting with Jesus as our measuring stick, we're in a lot of trouble, right? So I was called out by this wonderful woman that we know who's in our Sunday night crew, and she called me out and says, I don't think you look at women the way that Jesus looks at you. And just knife to the heart.
Mm.
And I instantly wanted to parry out of that and just start talking about something else or intellectualize that. Because if I sit with that too long, and that's not just gals that I do that with, that's everybody. But we're all guilty of that to one degree or another. If we looked at other people and use that as our access point, the way that Jesus just looks at us, things start moving in a different direction. Mm-hmm. It's so subtle and basic, but it's foundational.
Mm.
And so this is a little
yes.
off your question.
No, it's not. It's right in the right lane.
Yeah.
So I got called out. I'm using a measuring stick for myself and for other people that Jesus doesn't use for me.
Right.
Which is insane.
So good.
But we slip into that very subtly sometimes. Yeah. We don't even realize we're using the old measuring stick.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, but it's a beautiful right. thing to bring awareness into that and reset and then get to show other people a more accurate version of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's speaking to me through what you're talking there was the magnitude of uncomfortability that we feel when that knife is pressed into us, you know? And then what is our response? I'll tell you, like, my response normally is not looking at the measuring stick of Jesus. You know, my response normally is the standard coping mechanisms of just like, okay, this is hurting right now. Like this is brutal. Like, oh man. Okay. Like everyone, hey, this is brutal. Like, hey, look at this knife. Like,
yes,
it's in me right now. Like, give me sympathy. Give me this rather than, you know, and going back to the woman, like, I don't know how long she was sitting in that, like that realm, but I want to get that knife out, you know, very fast, you know, in whatever way possible.
And what most people do is put it in the other person and say, oh yeah? Well, let me tell you about some places where you're missing the mark. Mm.
Well, that's more of a Peter-style operating system.
Yes.
All of it is to cartwheel out of the feeling. Because when I got hit with that comment by this wonderful gal, our great friend, I started tearing up, not because I was ashamed, but because I know how much Jesus loves me and how that was the starting point. And then I realized, I'm like, oh gosh, I'm not extending this to other people. So it was kind of the way the woman's operating first. And then I had a little bit of shame coupled in there, kind of a Peter style operating system, but it was a moment of self-reflection. If sin isn't making us pause and reflect from time to time, then we're probably doing something a little bit, we need to reflect.
Yes.
Do we not?
We do. And we need to have people around us that love us enough to be able to challenge us too. That was so beautiful and rare for someone to have the courage to say, you know what, God's kind of put something on my heart to be able to share. And I think it's an area of growth. And then for you to have the courage to actually receive that and not just parlay out of that ditch and go, wait,
well,
you don't understand.
I had been telling her a ton of my relational history and my life story and how I was operating in the dating world now. And I had given her a monologue that went on for 15 minutes and she was listening so patiently and then just succinctly hit me with that. And I'm like, oh gosh, that's a spirit. That is a spirit shot straight to my core.
Yeah. So let's get back to Peter and the sinful woman. Do you think they had different expectations of how Jesus would respond to their sinfulness?
I think they did. I think that the action of the woman going straight to Jesus and then the action of Peter going to himself takes away maybe the expected reaction. I think possibly Peter wanted to be comforted from afar, maybe. Whether this woman in proximity even was at the feet of Jesus, you know?
That's good. How important are the expectations? How we expect Jesus to respond to our sinfulness? How does that impact our desire to either get away from him or move towards him?
I think it's the key, like the key ingredient on how to reflect in there and the feelings that come from that initial pain, from that initial whatever it may be. Yeah.
Jesus is interested in my story. He's not interested in instantly going to, you're a dope. When I bring anything to Jesus, he wants the full picture. He knows the full picture already, and he's there for the whole thing. He's not there to say, all right, dump all your sins on me. I'll tell you you're an idiot, and then I'll give you a temporary hall pass so you can keep moving around until you got to come back. That's just not how it works. That's not how he works. So he's interested in the whole story, the whys, the what's, the who's, and that's a different way of caring for a person than just immediately going into condemnation and shame. That's the Jesus I know and I want to spend time with. I don't want to go to angry boss Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Like finding in that moment, right? Like, what may the Lord want for me in this moment of reflection? And that's a big one in my story and just like how I operate. And, you know, even reflecting on some things of this past week and just like, okay, so now that we're thinking about like, okay, there's this uncomfortability, there's these feelings, there's this, like, Jesus, what are these feelings and why am I going through them in this moment? But knowing the full picture of what you're saying, like, that it is part of the story.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of trying to mentally make some notes about this journey from Peter to the sinful woman. Funny that our landing spot is the sinful woman. Maybe we should call it the woman who washed Jesus's feet or something, because I feel like culture's already labeled her, right? And it's like, okay, if that's the finish line, that feels a little awkward. The woman who really understood Jesus, something else. The first thing I talked about was, or wrote down, was this expectations. But answer me this: if we shared with Jesus, if Peter shared with Jesus his true heart of hearts in that moment, if he was to say something like, "Jesus, I'm sorry, I'm too focused on myself right now to be focused on you," how do you think he would respond to that?
How do you think Jesus would respond to that?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Jesus. I can't, my headlamp's on me and I'm so focused on me right now. I can't focus on you. How do you think he would respond?
Jonathan, you take this one, because I think I know the answer, but Jonathan, I want you to go for this one.
Yeah. I think that Jesus would give him grace, and I think that he works through that awareness of maybe showing him, why are you putting the spotlight on yourself? Put it on the one who heals and one that matters.
Hmm. Alex, what is your thought?
I think Jesus celebrates the awareness, to kind of echo what you just said. I don't think if we can have an honest disclosure, whether that's with Jesus, the people in our lives, and say, this is where I'm at. When I've opened up to Jesus, when I've opened up to other people, people do not, they don't slap me. They don't swear at me. They don't condemn me. It brings us closer together. It's that level of disclosure and honesty and self-awareness and saying, I messed up, I missed the mark. That strengthens relationships.
That's really good, because again, I don't want to throw Peter on the leather couch and psychoanalyze him, but he does represent a lot of us and the way that we operate, and we focus too much on ourselves, our sin, or our good deeds, right? I mean, we can miss that mark in two different ways. We can overfixate on our struggles or our successes. And probably like Peter, a lot of us feel like, gosh, Jesus, if you really knew me, you wouldn't love me. And there's this hidden fear that we feel like, gosh, if I, away from me, you have no idea. You know, you just have part of the story. And I loved, Alex, what you said about saying he wants the whole story. He knows it already, but he wants to hear us tell the whole story. And it seemed like the woman who washed Jesus' feet knew somehow that Jesus knew her story and she was still going to be loved. She was convinced that his response was going to be different. It's so interesting, even the Pharisees there in that scene. If Jesus knew who this woman was, he wouldn't let her touch him. Isn't that interesting? It's that back, that's that other operating system that focuses on the spotlight on the sin and the sinful person and how sin makes the person unlovable. Now Jesus says, no, let me change the way you're looking at yourself. Let me change the way. How interesting would it be if Jesus would have just paused and said to this woman who is crying and wiping his feet with her hair, if he would have said, hey, excuse me, this Pharisee just insulted you. What would you say to this Pharisee? This quote-unquote sinful woman, do you think she'd encountered Jesus enough to be able to have a different operating system as the way that she even looked at other fellow sinners?
Or do you think she would go ahead and love the Pharisee in that moment? That's an interesting question to ask. It really is.
I think that the... I mean, yeah, that's what I would say too. I think the pain of what she has possibly been through, yeah, I think would be enough, like, where that's what how she postured herself in that situation. And I could see that she look at the Pharisee in that way.
And Jesus went on to tell the Pharisee a story, right? To illustrate, told him a story about two debtors, and the one who has been forgiven much loves much. And this woman was in the process of being forgiven an incredible debt that she couldn't pay down. And it was impacting her ability to receive love and to share love with those around her. So if we were to put the cookies on the bottom shelf and say, okay, here it is. Everybody's acknowledges their own sinfulness from time to time. And we have to include in that our own sinfulness of missing the mark by trying to earn something that we can never earn, right? I love Tim Keller's frequent conversations. He said, not only do we need to be saved from our bad deeds, we need to be saved from our good deeds as well, because we can trust those good deeds somehow to do something for us cosmically, that spiritually, that they never can. So cookies on the bottom shelf, how do we move from a Peter operating system to this woman who wanted to be as close to Jesus? I love the fact that one of you pointed that out. Jesus, Peter may have wanted to love Jesus from a distance. You know, I'm going to sit in the back row. Jesus, I'm going to sit in the smoking section. You know, and I'm going to love you from a distance. But the feet, as he demonstrated in John 13, is a very intimate thing. That's uncomfortable. And this woman is like, what does that journey look like? What have you learned about that journey yourself? What about that journey would you like to learn more about?
I think it's stepping into, it's the vulnerability in that moment and with yourself. For me, like, I have been in Peter's scenario many times, and it is probably the most, at one point in my life, the most comfortable place to be, just sitting in myself far away from God and, hey, I can do this on my own type situation. And then you have the woman who knows where the answer may lie and where love may lie, because I hear two sinful people, and they're going through whatever the uncomfortable feeling they're going through. Peter's looking inward and staying over here, and she is acknowledging, like, inward, but just like showing her love and her trust and her faith in Jesus, and she's at his feet, you know. And then you have, and I like to put them in maybe like a little let's talk shuffleboard, right? You got two ends of the board, and then you got this whole sandy area in between, and then are you taking steps to get closer to Jesus in that way, or are you just finding like middle ground or what works for you? And that's been my story, at least, where like I find like the little comfortability in the middle until I'm like, okay, like I'm not feeling that anymore, so let me operate here for a bit. But I think Jesus calls us, I know Jesus calls us into that more uncomfortable situation of like fall into humility and sit at his feet.
I think it just comes back to the who question. Is it about me or is it about him? I think we can reset on the beginning part of this episode. It's just where we start our questions. Not what do I think about what I've done. Jesus what do you think about who I am? Not how well am I doing right now? Jesus, how close am I to you right now? If we're starting our questions with Jesus, we end up in a different space. And I think that's what the woman was doing. And I don't know whether that was a product of her circumstances and that she just, all of her defense mechanisms were so low because she had basically no self-esteem left. She was at the end of her rope. She's like, listen, I'm a sinner. I don't know whether she was a prostitute. Was that the subtext to it?
I think so. I think that was the...
Yeah. So she might not have had anybody in her life holding her in especially high esteem, whereas Peter probably had some people around him and were celebrating a couple of things that he was doing from time to time. Yeah. And so to speak to the point that you made about Tim Keller is there's that caution that we need to have about we're never as bad as we think we are and we're never as good as we think we are, but they're both dangerous. Mm. They're both incredibly dangerous. So there are still parts of Peter that he probably liked about himself. There's other things that people liked about him that played into his pride, which ultimately led to the shame that got him away from Jesus. So how do we, you know, disarm the booby trap of pride, which leads to shame, which leads to distance?
Yeah. So good. There's so many different things we can explore here. One of them comes to mind is I'm just thinking about this. These feelings of Peter's unworthiness was brought about by great success. So interesting, isn't it? Mm. I know someone sitting kind of close to me that's had some great success recently on some things, some projects that he's been working on.
Wow.
And isn't that interesting that even in those successful moments that we think are going to be payday, we've talked about ego biscuits, we've talked about so many of these other things, can bring us to a strange hollow place of saying, I don't know if I'm worthy if our attention's focused on us.
Mm. It's like, where is your reliance?
Yeah.
Like, and is this little things that Peter's doing that he's maybe getting fed up through?
Yes.
Like, and when I say feeding, I mean like soul nourishing. I have the strength to continue, and we know this to be a false sense of strength.
Yeah, and that's so true.
And this woman, her sense of self, like Alex just talked about, was depleted.
Yeah.
Maybe speaks to Peter having a little bit more of that, hey, I maybe have another way out of this, or like I still have a little bit in me.
Yeah.
I don't need to look that way yet fully.
Well, what's a healthy way to metabolize success in a way that works with Jesus? Because Jesus doesn't hate success. He doesn't look at a big fish haul and be like, you blew it. So how do we get better at tolerating, digesting, sharing our success with Jesus? What does he say about our success rather than what do I say about my success and what do other people say about my success? I mean, that's where the ego biscuit comes in. You're getting a full basket of them. When you do something that people give you the affirmations for and they say, oh, you're so clever. You're so talented. You're good at this. You helped so much. I can't believe you built that. The list goes on. How do we bring that basket of ego biscuits straight to Jesus?
Yeah.
So hard to do, right? Because we live in a humanistic world where we have humanistic right in front of us. But then you go back to like, what is the life-giving vine, right? That these successes are coming into your life. Like what, like who is actually in control here? Who is the storyteller? Who is writing your script?
So good. Jesus told these fishermen who were unfruitful and a night full of fishing to go into deep water, which is not what you did, after the sun had already come up, which is not what you do. They captured so many fish, their boats were almost sinking. Who gets the credit for where they were in the lake? Who gets the credit for the fish. Whose fish are they? I think that's where a lot of the battle rests. We all of a sudden hit the shore with full boats full of fish, and all of a sudden I'm like, look at me. Oh, man, isn't that awesome? Look at all my fish. Look at all. Boy, I'm going to make a lot of money. I'm eating sushi tonight, you know. Oh, and whether he explicitly told us to do something or he just created us to be a certain way, he's still the architect. He's still the one that's created the context and the environment for us to be able to say, oh, there you are. God, you are the one who's given me that creativity. You are the one that told me where to fish, how to fish, when to fish. These are your fish. What do you want me to do with your fish?
I think we forget about the giver of the gift, and our eyes are so focused on the gift. And I think if I was Peter, and man, did we score in this part of the lake, I would for sure feel a little bit of like, yup, maybe put my leg up on the side of the boat a little bit, you know, and just, you know,
yes,
just broaden my shoulders a little bit rather than like hit my knees.
Yes.
And thank the Lord, like,
yes,
for this gift. Because yeah, I put the boat here, you know, guys, look at it. Check it out. You know,
I'm looking at it like Monopoly money, like our worldly success, and acting like it's super, super real.
More, please.
It's his board, and it all goes back in his box at the end.
Yeah.
And we're acting like just because we get to take the car out for a test drive, like it's somehow our car, it's somehow our board. I own Boardwalk, I own Park Place, whatever, you know, version you're playing. I put hotels on it. These are my hotels. And it's fascinating. The concepts of control and ownership.
Yeah.
That we want to feel like things are ours, but they're his. I'm good at convincing myself that there are things that are mine because it feels good to be in control, and it feels good to have things. It gives us a sense of security and sometimes identity. But what a dirty trick that is, isn't it?
So good. All right. It was Len Plain here. I want to hear from both of you. If the woman who washed Jesus' feet, which we've aptly renamed, we've relabeled her, she's the one that washed Jesus's feet, if she was here and she was to say, here's the one key, guys, this is the one key for getting things right, what do you think she would say?
I personally think she would say, where is my nourishment found? Where do I look for love? And I bet you she has been to like very dark places in her life that nothing that she had previously known of maybe a coping mechanism or way to get out of that situation didn't work. And she probably exhausted her list. And I bet you all the act of sinning, all those things, the time that she maybe reflected, like nothing could give her nourishment. And she went directly to the source of nourishment. So I'd say like that would be probably what she would say.
That's so good. I love that. She may have tried to find her nourishment in men or relationships. The Pharisees were trying to find their nourishment in the applause and the appearance of holiness to other people. Really good question. Really good insight. Alex, what do you think?
I might be cutting it real short, but I just had the thought, he is, therefore I am.
Yeah, that's good. It's something that's so short, it takes more reflection because you have to just sit with it. And you actually, we have, when we hear it, say it again.
He is, therefore I am.
So we have an opportunity to just jettison that in our brain and just be like, pop, nope, I'm not even going to entertain that. Or we have the opportunity to actually sit with that and let that in and let it sink into us and say, okay. Hit it one more time.
He is, therefore I am.
And I think the woman who washed Jesus' feet operated with that operating system. He is. Because I have my existence, not only in this life, but for life eternal. Hmm. So good. Well, thank you for hearing us. Thank you for listening, joining us, our conversation. Jonathan, thank you for being in the studio and coming in. It's just been so fun to have you here and being able to explore scripture and incredible questions. And Alex, thank you again for identifying how important it is for us to get the right question. Because if we don't get the right question, it's going to take us off course. But boy, the minute we get the right question where Jesus is at the centerpiece rather than us, beautiful things happen. So I also want to thank the people behind The Beach Walk that kicked this thing off with, Go Ministry International, who support our podcast. So thankful for them and their commitment to bringing Jesus both locally and around the world through relationships where people can say, this is who Jesus is and this is what he's done for us. So thank you for joining our podcast. Hope you have a great day.